Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Herbie, let's go.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Well, my name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 9 o'clock tonight on this beautiful Friday. I am on the road. I am down in Canton, Ohio for the Hall of Fame enshrinement that is going to take place tomorrow night. I'm actually in the hotel where all of the Hall of Famers are at, although none of them are here now because there's a big old dinner that's going on that I'm not going to be a part of because I get to hang out with you for the next 3 hours, and I'm actually really excited about it. Because we have been putting in work this week to put together a show that we hope is really representative of how great Brian Urlacher's career is. We had the opportunity to talk with a lot of people, some people down here in the hallways of the Holiday Inn here in Canton. We talked with Terrell Davis. We talked with Hall of Famer Mike Haynes. We talked with Andre Reed. We talked with Alex Brown, Charles Tillman, Thomas Jones, Bob Babbage. So we have a lot of ground to cover when it comes to the Hall of Fame and when it comes to Brian Urlacher's career. Brian actually just walked past here a little while ago, too, on his way to dinner, along with Bob Babbage, who said, "I look more distinguished now than I did when I was covering the team," which i.e. means I'm old. And that's okay. That's totally okay. Before we get into some of the Urlacher stuff, and I don't have a phone screener, but you can text in if you wish. 670-11 is the way that you can text the show. I have some thoughts on last night's game and what was important versus what's not important. Most of it is not important. That's just the way that preseason football is. Like, there's not a lot that's really interesting about preseason football. But there was one thing in particular that I thought was It had a little bit of credence, and I was interested to see how it would work. I'm glad that we saw last night Matt Nagy calling plays into the helmet, because that's something that he wasn't really doing down in Bourbonnais. In Bourbonnais, it had been Mark Helfrich who was talking to the quarterback. Now, Mitch Trubisky didn't play last night, and there were a lot of people who were upset with that being the case that they wanted to see. But, you know, it's five preseason games. I'm not worried about any of that stuff. There are two things I'm not worried about: the Roquan Smith holdout and the first team offense not playing last night. I think both of those issues will get resolved. Although it is interesting, I there is part of me that thinks that the Roquan Smith stuff might be the canary in the coal mine for how labor discussions are going to go in the next couple of years between the players and the owners. And I'm interested to see that up close and personal. So that part of it, I think, is really interesting. But I expect that he will be in, and I'm curious to see how long it will be until the owners or the Bears ownership decides that it's probably more valuable to them to have him in camp versus him not being in camp. The other thing, getting back to the Nagy thing, watching the mechanism with which how he's going to coach a game play out, I thought was valuable. And here's what I mean. When there's not that we could figure out as far as strategy goes, we're not going to see what their offense is hopefully going to look like once September gets here, or as teams adjust to the Bears and the Bears then adjust back to what other teams are doing to them. But we saw last night him take some risk and use clock management fairly wisely, I thought. And that was kind of cool.
where those are the things that under John Fox were a little bit frustrating. Game management, clock management. Are you making the right decision about what to do with the ball at the end of the half? Are you using your timeouts correctly to get the ball back? Him going for 2 points. Like, all of that stuff, like, that's what fascinated me, to see if he could have this work out the way that he wanted it to work out. And I think that you have to give Matt Nagy an A for his first deployment of all the things that have to do with how the Bears are going to be run on game day. Those things will matter down the line, and streamlining those things is important as well, and that's something that a head coach should be able to do. The other stuff, like, I don't know if you want to get overly excited about Javon Wims. I don't know. I thought that he played great last night, but playing great, especially in the second half of a preseason game, it doesn't do a lot for me. It's, when it's preseason game number 1 of 5, it really doesn't do a lot for me. But they drafted him, and he lived up to his scouting report last night, which I think that you could say is encouraging, that he lived up to what he is billed as, which is a big body guy that does make catches, can win jump balls. We saw all of that being on display last night. I know that there were a lot of people who didn't like the broadcast. I heard McNeil and Parkins talking about that as they were getting ready to leave. I got a chance to sample the broadcast last night in the press box here in Canton, and I actually really liked that in the third quarter they were like, you know what, we're not calling this game anymore. Because tell the truth, you were bored with it too. So having Dungy in there last night, I thought added a lot of cool football conversation to an otherwise boring product. I think NBC realized that if you're going to do the Hall of Fame game and you're talking about 180 guys and the announcers probably don't know, I would say 80 of those guys on the two teams, then yeah, why don't you turn it into a talk show? Talk about the game. Talk about some of the biggest storylines in the NFL. And I thought in the third quarter especially, they really did that, along with the interviews of the guys from the Hall of Fame, all the guys going in, and there were some bizarre ones. I'll tell you, if you follow me on Twitter or on Instagram, I put the videos up. You can see it. At Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find me if you're on Twitter. I thought the most emblematic of Brian Urlacher moments last night was him getting introduced. So to kind of give you the lay of the land, I was pleasantly surprised at the amount of access we got last night. I was down on the sidelines for pregame, not during the game, but for pregame. And I literally bumped into Brian, and we talked in a little bit as he was getting ready to do a couple of interviews. And I said to him, I said, how are things going? And you can tell that it's been overwhelming. Brian's not really the type of guy that searches out the camera, at least in his playing career, when it has to do anything that has to do with his playing career. We've seen with the hair stuff, he has been a lot more fun and funny. But when it comes to football, Brian's pretty serious about this stuff. So I can tell that it's been a little bit overwhelming for him. And I joked with him and I said, how long is the speech? And he said, they only give me 15 minutes. So here's what I've learned being here and talking to some Hall of Famers, and you'll hear from a couple of them before the night is done. That is one of the most stressful things about this weekend, is how do you go about putting together a speech? And now it's a suggestion. It's not an edict. It's a suggestion that it's 15 minutes. How do you go about doing a speech that is supposed to encompass your entire football career? Everyone who helped you get to this point, say it with some emotion, say it with some levity so that the people in the crowd don't get bored, and try to show respect for teammates and coaches and general managers and college coaches and high school coaches and college teammates and your parents and your cousin that taught you that first football or whatever that story is. Distilling that down into 15 minutes and then being terrified about not leaving someone out is where a lot of these guys are at this point in the process. So I'm looking forward to it. But anyway, back to last night. So basically what happens is the players all line up on opposite sides of the 50-yard line. The Hall of Famers are introduced. They come out. They get a big roar from the crowd. They walk down the middle of the lane, and they wave on going to the opposite sideline. Brian waved, and then he slap five. He dapped up every one of the Bears. These guys, mostly guys that he doesn't know. Now, he did address them in the locker room before the game. But he dapped them all up as he's walking out, hugged Sherrick McManus because that is the only teammate that he has left on the team. And it was pure Brian. Like, that's what Brian is been about. He's been a guy that's been about team, like, his whole career. And it was fun to see that. And then the juxtaposition, because after Brian was introduced, Ray Lewis was introduced. And Ray did all of the Ray Lewis stuff. Now, I'm not – there's nothing wrong with – well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing all the Ray Lewis stuff. Like, people came to Canton to see him do the dance and all that stuff. But it just couldn't have set these two guys apart. It's like Ray was like, yes, y'all are here for me. I'm going to do this dance. I'm going to be out here doing the whole thing. And Brian's like, let me just – I'm going to just, like, hang out with the guys, and I'm going to get to the end of this so that we can move on from this and we can get back to the business of whatever it is we're in the business of. So I thought that that was emblematic of the way that Brian Urlacher carried himself throughout his career, and I thought it was a fun way to – like, that was the first thing that people said to me after I tweeted out the video. People saw Lewis, and they were like, oh, yeah, that's typical – Ray Lewis stuff that's going on. I got to be careful because Ray Lewis might come around the corner. Like, seriously, I saw him earlier. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening, if anything. So what I thought we would do tonight, along with talking about the game here and there, I don't think that there's anything really magical about last night's game. If there had been, like, a significant injury or anything like that, then I probably would have broken protocol and discussed some of this that stuff more. But There wasn't a lot of interesting stuff there once you found out that Nagy has said, no, we're not going to play Mitch Trubisky. We're not going to play the Stars. I do understand people that would make the argument, and I believe our buddy Anthony Heron made that argument, the argument that there's value in Trubisky getting in and out of the huddle in a new offense, that there's value. And I would add this to the mix. Since Nagy hasn't been calling plays into the helmet during training camp, that there's value in Trubisky hearing Nagy for a couple of run plays. Like, maybe you don't open him up to injury by, you know, letting him pass the ball, but you have him go out there and do the thing. And he's from Ohio, and he said last week when I was in Bourbonnais that it was kind of important to be back in Ohio. But we all know what these games are. These are games that you're trying to figure out the bottom of your roster and not the top of your roster, at least till the Bears get to what for them will be preseason game 4, and for most people will be preseason game 3. I understand that argument. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. Like, I think that that's a solid argument to have, that there would have been some value to sending the first team out there to run a couple of plays. But they got 4 more games where they can do all that stuff, and that doesn't – so it doesn't bother me. We'll see them, I'm sure, in time. So those are my thoughts on the game. If you got thoughts, you want to text in, 670-11 is the way that you can do it. We're going to take a quick timeout, and I want to share some stuff with you from interviews that we've done over the last couple of months and last couple of weeks leading up to Brian Urlacher going into the Hall of Fame, and people that we sat down with here at the Hall of Fame. It's pretty cool. I also ran. I went to the museum today, and I have a story that I'd like to tell you about that because I saw something in the museum that made me smile. I'll share that with you and Thomas Jones's thoughts about Brian Urlacher, the player and the teammate. We'll do that next here on The Score. We are glad that you are hanging out with us. I have taken the show on the road. We are in Canton, Ohio, home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Tomorrow, Brian Urlacher will be inducted into the hall. I wrote a piece for 670thescore.com as I was flying to Cleveland. I'm staying in Cleveland because there's a golf tournament in Akron. The Hall of Fame stuff is going on, so there wasn't a lot of places to stay. So I'm staying in Cleveland, and on the flight to Cleveland, although I guess I would have flown to Cleveland no matter what and just driven down, but on the flight to Cleveland, I was reflecting about the last time I had been to Canton. And the last time I was here was back in 2005. The Bears were playing the Dolphins back in 2005 in the Hall of Fame game. And I remember just being so focused on covering the game because I think it was my second year covering the team. It was my second full season covering the team. So I was so focused on, well, what's the camp battle and what things are going to happen during the game and how is this team going to improve from a 5-win team and blah, 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 blah. So I didn't really give myself an opportunity to enjoy Canton. And I thought it was quaint, and I remember parking in someone's driveway on my way to the game. Things have changed in 13 years. That is over. It used to be a high school field that had the hash marks for high school, college, and pro, which made it quite the eyesore. They no longer have that. It looks a lot better now. They're doing all sorts of construction. But this time, I really gave myself an opportunity to enjoy the museum, which I hadn't done. And it's something that I think can be done in a couple of hours. Like, you don't have to. It's not one of those things where, oh, it was exhausting being at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I was happy to see so much Bears stuff. Like, there's a ton. And when you think about all the champion, the NFL championships that were won and the pre-Super Bowl era by the Bears and the history and this being the charter franchise of the National Football League, it's cool to see all that historic stuff. I had forgotten that they took Devin Hester's jersey and the ball that he scored the record return on and put it in. So there's a great display of that here. Brian's locker with all of his stuff in it is ready and set for induction tomorrow. It's on the first floor, like right when you walk in. And I took a picture of it. If you're following me on Twitter, you can see it, at Lawrence W. Holmes. You can check out all the stuff that I've done over the last couple of days down here in Canton. And I appreciated that. But the thing that made me smile the biggest, because it was a complete surprise. I'm walking around, and you're looking at stuff. And I was looking at some Lombardi stuff, which is fascinating, a really fascinating guy, Vince Lombardi. And I saw there was an old black and white Bears photo on a back wall. And I said, ah, it's my guy. So it is a picture of Dick Butkus and Doug Buffone making a sandwich out of a Lions player. And it's on a wall. So it's like bigger than life size, Doug, like on the wall. And, you know, Doug would have been the first one to tell you that he was nowhere close to being a Hall of Fame player. But he was really good for a really long time. So seeing his picture in the Hall of Fame, obviously connected with Butkus because that was the running gag that whenever you saw Dick Butkus make a tackle, you saw Doug Buffone somewhere in the picture. So to see them combine for that, I just thought was great. Like, it just made me – I smiled like the biggest smile. And there are a ton of Bears fans who have made the trip down to Canton. They are looking forward to seeing Brian inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it's been kind of a cool experience to actually take it all in this time instead of being in such a rush. Like, I know that there are reporters that went home because the Bears are back in Bourbonnais. They'll be back in Bourbonnais practicing tomorrow. They didn't stick around here. I thought maybe there was a chance that, like, Sherrick McManus would stick around, but he's got work to do, too. So But a bunch of the old guys I know are in town. The Briggses, the Tillmans, like all those guys are here for sure. So anyway, to get started with us talking about Brian Urlacher and his career, and I have some thoughts on it as someone who watched it up close. I wanted to share the conversations that we had with people dating back to, you know, earlier in the year when I had Thomas Jones on, knowing that Brian was going into the Hall of Fame. I knew that I wanted to ask him a couple of questions about it. Bob Babich, who's going to do the induction. So if you're old school, Bob Babich was the linebackers coach. And I mean, I've found out, and you'll hear in some of the interviews, why it was him who was chosen. Because my money was on two different guys. My money was on Lance Briggs and Lovie Smith. I thought those were the two guys that would induct Brian into the Hall of Fame. But after I did some digging, I found out like how tight Brian is with old Bullet Bob, and it all made sense. But I wanted you to take a listen to this, and I thought about this too, because that 2005 season, the last time I was here, Thomas Jones was on this team. He was an offensive player. I think, Olin Krutz belongs in this conversation too. An offensive player that the defensive guys respected. Like they respected the approach of Thomas Jones. Thomas has now gone on to become a very successful actor. And he's in Luke Cage this season. If you're a Marvel fan, he's got a couple movies that are coming out. He was in Straight Outta Compton. And, you know, I've joked that now his Wikipedia page says Thomas Jones is an American actor, even though he ran for 10,000 yards in the National Football League. But we had a conversation about Brian and Devin Hester, but I wanted you to hear what he had to say about being a fan of Brian Urlacher's for a really long time.
The weird thing about Lack is me and Lack, we've known each other since college. We both made the Walter Camp All-American team, first team. We made a lot of these same All-American teams and were like, it met at the College Football Awards in Orlando. And then we, you know, spent time together, just kind of moving around different All-American, first team All-American banquets. I was consensus All-American. I think he might've been a consensus All-American too, maybe. But we were everywhere. And during the draft, you know, I was 7 and he was 9. So, you know, and then we played in preseason, we played you guys. And I never saw him as a football player until he put his uniform on. I mean, one of the most lighthearted, nice, free-spirited, just happy. I mean, I never saw him as a football player. From the first time that I met him to the last time I saw him, I never saw him as a football player. And all of a sudden, he put the uniform on, and then he's like, he go from like being Lack, like that we knew, to that we just joked around with and, you know, talked trash with and goofed around, to Lack, Brian, from Lack to Brian Urlacher, like number 54 Urlacher on the back of his jersey, like chasing guys down, you know, knocking the crap out of linemen, slamming quarterbacks, slamming running backs, intercepting the ball, always in the right place. I mean, just instincts out of this world. It's super weird, man, because even to this day, like, I don't see him as a football player. I see him as Lack, like my boy. But then you watch him in the game, and it's like 6'4", 260, running a 4'4", and he's like a complete savage, stripping a ball. He just had like this, I don't know, man, you literally turned into another person during game day. Even in practice, man, he would like joke in practice. And, you know, of course, you know, we get serious sometimes depending on what was going on, but I never really saw him as a football player, man, until he put that uniform on in the games. And he literally turned into somebody else. An intense, you could just see it in his eyes, his energy, tenacious, ferocious competitor, bro. Ferocious competitor. I mean, because in practice, I mean, obviously we practice against each other and we practice very hard. But I don't know, man. I mean, when he was selected as a finalist, you know, I started really lobbying for him hard on social media and stuff. because it's my brother, you know, it's not just a football player, you know, Ryan and Chase, you know, they're my family, they're my brothers, you know. And I started looking at some of the highlights and sharing some of the highlight reels that people made. And I was looking at some of that stuff and I was like, wow, you know, this guy's been, he was making plays from the time he stepped foot in the NFL to the time he stopped. I mean, it was just nonstop chaos. So I'm so happy for him, man. He deserves it. He's the epitome of a Hall of Famer from top to bottom, off the field, on the field, done so much for Chicago, made a lot of Chicago Bears fans happy to watch him play every Sunday. I'm just excited for him, man. If anyone deserves to be in the Hall of Fame and be a first ballot Hall of Famer, it's Brian Urlacher, hands down, period. And he's in my class, and I'm proud that he's, you know, we have someone from our class that's in all that's going to the Hall of Fame too.
So that was Thomas Jones. I love the quote, nonstop chaos. It's a great quote for Thomas Jones. It, one of the things that I kept thinking about is how impressive Urlacher was with range. And what I mean is, a lot of people are going to talk to you about, you'll hear all weekend long, sideline to sideline, Brian Urlacher, sideline to sideline. Yes, yes, he is the guy that ran down Michael Vick. He's the Matrix play against the Falcons where he jumps over the line of scrimmage. But to me, when I look at the plays that he made deep down the field, just knocking passes away, and you're going, wait, how does a guy who's 6'4" and 256 pounds backpedal 25 yards like that while still keeping his eyes on the quarterback? It's a really impressive feat. And I my biggest takeaway from this entire weekend, I've been asked about it a lot, doing national stuff for Stadium, and I was talking with Cap a little while ago on NBC Sports Chicago. My biggest takeaway is that that team, like that era of Bears football, changed the way that we think about defense, and he changed the way that we think about the middle linebacker spot. That you could put a supreme athlete at that spot. That it doesn't just have to be a battering ram dude that you're putting out there to stop the run and fill a gap. It can be someone who is significant to your pass defense, and Brian was definitely that. The stat that I've been going to, which I think is the craziest stat that is most telling about Urlacher, the pass defender. He hasn't played in 5 years. You got to be out of the league 5 years to be eligible to go to the Hall of Fame. So he's out. He's been out for 5 years. He still ranks in the top five of middle linebackers with pass defenses and interceptions from 2006 to now. He's number four on the list now, having not played a snap for 5 years. That's how big of a difference maker Brian Urlacher was. I'm excited about Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks comes back this week. It's going to be the Cleveland Browns that are going to be on Hard Knocks this year. And I think that they're a fascinating story. They got a lot of stuff going on where, you know, you've got the five-episode arc, and it's going to start on August 7th. So Tuesday, make sure that you are tuned in. You have the number one pick in the draft. You have a quarterback battle. You've got all the stuff with Josh Gordon. You've got them saying that we're going to be a team that is to be reckoned with, and I don't know if anyone believes them, but it is the truth. Hard Knocks is back. I think that even as much as the Hall of Fame game signifies that football is on its way. HBO Sports, NFL Films, and the Cleveland Browns team up for an unfiltered, all-access look at what it takes to make it in the NFL when Hard Knocks training camp with the Cleveland Browns kicks off its five-episode season. That's coming up on Tuesday, August 7th at 9 p.m. The new season on the groundbreaking sports reality series spotlights the AFC North franchise that has the hometown region excited as a wave of new young players and veteran acquisitions get acclimated to the team. Catch it Tuesdays, 9 p.m. on HBO. We're going to take a break. When we come back, one of the guys that played with Brian Urlacher, I sat down with him, Alex Brown. He's got thoughts on Lack. We'll share that next here on The Score. Glad that you're hanging out with me. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 9 o'clock tonight. I am live out in Canton. We are getting ready for Brian Urlacher to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. We're spending a lot of time talking about that on tonight's show, and I appreciate if you're a big football fan that I think that you'll get something out of it. And even if you're not, I think the interviews are pretty good either way. I know the Cubs have won a nail biter. I was listening, I was watching that down here. Thanks, MLB app, at bat app. So I was watching that crazy ninth inning and some terrible base running by the San Diego Padres. And I know there are some people that want to talk a little bit about the Bears game last night, but seeing Brian Urlacher put into the Hall of Fame, I felt it was appropriate for us to spend a significant amount of time talking about that. So I got the opportunity to talk with Alex Brown this past week. Alex and I worked together on the post-game show. I just got my contract, so I can say that I will be back on the NBC Sports Chicago post-game show this year with Alex and with Lance and with Matt Forte this year, which is going to be a whole lot of fun. But this is a guy that played a long time with Brian Urlacher, and I wanted to get his opinion about what type of player Lack was. So we sat down and had a long conversation about it. Enjoy.
Lawrence Holmes here with you until 9 o'clock tonight. We are in Canton. We are hanging out because we are celebrating Brian Urlacher going to the Hall of Fame and being inducted this weekend. One of his teammates is Alex Brown, who happens to be one of my teammates in a much different capacity. Soon to be award-winning broadcaster, I think. Alex Brown joining me here on The Score. We do the pre and post game together over at NBC Sports Chicago. AB, what it do?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing really well, man. I'm glad that all of you guys have the opportunity to share this cool event of Brian Urlacher going to the Hall of Fame. So what's this like for you, knowing that he made it into the Hall?
Man. It just kind of puts in perspective because I mean, from day one when I got here, I did follow him and see him in college. I knew him my sophomore year. So he was always good, right? And then you get here, and he's just a different type of guy. It was both what he was born with athletic-wise and then how hard he worked, and it was – his mental capacity of what he was supposed to do, what everybody else was supposed to do, and then the accountability factor that he had. I mean, all of that stuff mixed in together makes a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. So, and I think that's Brian Urlacher. He's so good, man. We'd weigh in every Thursday, and he's always bigger than me. And he's so much faster. It's like, okay, yep. See, I pride myself in thinking I'm a pretty good athlete. But when you see somebody, they're bigger and they're faster, you kind of just tip your cap and say, yep, that guy right there, he's a little different. And like, he was a little different.
When did you realize watching him play that, as you said, he was a little different?
When he ran down Amon Green?
Amon Green, yeah.
Amon Green ran 4.3, if not lower, at the combine. And I seen Urlacher run and get him. Run him down. So when you see a guy that big, that fast, and you're like, how fast is he? I've gotten that question so many times. Well, he runs as fast as he needs to. So there's something inside of those hamstrings that just say, yep, we need a little more juice right now, and he can go get it. See, I didn't have that extra gear. I had one gear, and that was it. he had a couple more gears, and he was able to do things that not only I couldn't do, but a lot of guys couldn't do. So he's a heck of a player, man. There's a lot of different instances throughout my 8 years playing with him that I could just pick off and name off. I mean, the Arizona game, seeing him, we need a play. We're struggling as a football team. We couldn't stop him on defense. We couldn't do anything on offense. And 54, without actually seeing it, it was almost like this, all right, let's move out of the way. I got this. Just come on. Let's go. I got it. And he just did it. And wow, it's been a lot of great performances. And for me, being in that game and playing with him in that game is one of the best performances I've seen.
when you're in it, do you realize what's happening, or is that one of those things where you guys are in the locker room after it's all said and done? You go, wow, did we just make that incredible comeback on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, we were pretty excited. I think when we really, I know for me, when I really understood like how crazy that was, it's when Coach Green kind of went off and we got to see that. And we got to see like how mad he was, and like they did. They let one get away. I mean, they truly, truly had our number, and for some reason they just didn't finish the game, and at no point did we think we shouldn't win that game. So when you're going with that attitude of knowing you should win, expecting to win, and you just, until that last second's off the clock, you figure something's going to happen that you're going to win the game until you don't. So that's, and we had that mentality. It's like, we were going to do whatever it took. If the offense couldn't score or the offense needed to score, whatever needed to happen, we make our plays on defense. The special teams comes through, and it started kind of there. And it's just at halftime, things just kind of changed. And we played better football.
What's crazy about that game to me, AB, is Urlacher led, and he, you know, had 25 tackles in the game. He was out of his mind. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the rest of you guys like clicked back in, and then everyone got to be kind of a part of it. You know, Devin is a part of it. Charles is a part of it. You're a part of it. Mike Brown is a part of it. I just wonder, like, in a game like that, we talk a lot in sports about the concept of momentum. If that's an actual time where you all felt that there was some bad momentum going one way and he was able to push the momentum the other way.
At halftime, we just knew that first half wasn't us. Now, we could know that and still go out in that second half and lose the game, but we still think we're a better football team. The fact that we came back and won that football game was because it just gave us the courage or the understanding that if we're ever put in that situation again, we have what it takes to come back and win. But we didn't think that team was better than us. So we knew we weren't playing good football, and if you take their best and you take our best, we'd win every single Sunday. That's what we thought. So we figured if we come out and we just played pretty good football and stopped making the mistakes we were making, which is missing tackles. I mean, you know, we were throwing interceptions. We just weren't doing the things that we had done the previous, I want to say, five games. So let's just come out. Let's play our brand of football, and we should be all right. Now, we understand the situation, so we're only going to get a few more possessions here. So we got to make sure that we really hone in and make the most out of each and every one, out of each and every one of the possessions.
Spending a few minutes with Alex Brown, you can watch Alex on NBC Sports Chicago this upcoming season as we do post-game along with Matt Forte and Lance Briggs. It's going to be a very, very fun time on the set for sure.
Oh, man.
We're going to have a good time. I promise you that, sir, that we will try to have as good of a time, if not better, than what we had last year. It's going to be a ton of fun. With Urlacher, the physical gifts, you see him. The size speed combination, you're a defensive end. He's bigger than you, and you say he's faster than you, too. Had that extra gear, chased down Michael Vick, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know about the classroom stuff with Brian Urlacher and what type of guy he was to lead a defense when it came to diagnosing plays.
Oh, man. He knew. It's hard to say a guy knows the play, all right? Let's put it in this manner. When you come out as a middle linebacker, you probably have 8 to 10 plays that they could run, maybe 5 to 6 plays that they can run. He was able to get that down to 1 or 2. And just before the snap, he had a really good idea. It was like an 80% chance. Okay, yep, this is it. Because he knew everything about that particular offense. It is super hard to do. Imagine having to learn everything possible about the New York Giants. And then come Sunday or Monday morning, you have to forget all of it and then learn everything about the Green Bay Packers. You know, it's crazy. He was able to do it, and I think that might have been his best quality, even though he was so good. That might have been his best quality, being able to – just his mental aspect of understanding where everybody was supposed to be. And then understanding, like, yeah, to say he didn't make mistakes, he did. And when he did, we'd make sure we got on him because he probably wasn't going to make another one for another 2 years, so you better get on him right then.
And I heard that when you guys made mistakes, he was very quick to point them out, because, loudly.
Yes, he was. But and he did it in a way – he knew everybody. Urlacher was he's a different kind of guy because he could get along with everybody. One, so, and he knew, okay, maybe I can say it this way to Vasio, or I can't say it this way to Peanut. You know, like, it's just different. He knew what to say, when to say it. And if you weren't in position, he knew how to tell you. And, man, he wasn't happy. You could tell when he wasn't happy. And you better do your job because all he wanted to do was win. That's it. He's still, I mean, you're still part of the brotherhood. As long as you got that C on your helmet, you're still part of the brotherhood. But he want to win. And if you're on the field, you better be helping to that cause. Because if not, honestly, hell, I didn't want you on the field. Let alone, I know he didn't want you on the field. So I want people out there that know what they're doing and that can help us win. If you can't do that, then I don't want you on the field. And now that they're 54.
I love hearing these stories about Brian, you know, as we're getting ready to see him inducted into the Hall of Fame. I talked with Charles Tillman, and he was saying how he's so excited to just see Brian put the gold jacket on. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say, you know, I played with that guy. I was there watching his Hall of Fame career. And AB, I didn't think of it that way. But because, look, I'm not on you guys' team. I wasn't in your locker room outside of covering it. So from that perspective, I'd love to know, what does this mean to you that the captain of your defense is in the Hall of Fame?
Me personally, man, honestly, the gratification I'll get from it is seeing a really, really good friend get his just due. You know, get what he should get. And that's being in the Hall of Fame, being at the highest honor in a sport that we all played, because we know he was one of the best. He was one of the best to ever do it. And that'll be kind of my gratification, just seeing when he puts that jacket on, when I see that bust of his face there. I mean, that's, golly, I'm going to be happy for him and his family, because I know, just like Peanut said, we were there throughout most of his career. Peanut was there for most of it. So, golly, man, like, he put in the work. He put in the work. Yeah, he was gifted. He was blessed with all his talent. But, my gosh, this guy worked hard, man. There was nobody that worked harder. I'm going to say it like that. I'm not going to say he's the hardest worker ever. No, I'm going to say nobody worked harder, because he gave it everything he had. And for a guy like that, as talented as he is, when you get a guy that's so talented and so committed, and then he can stay injury free, man, you're going to get a Hall of Famer. And I'm going to be happy for that, to see my buddy Cuzzo. I'm going to see him up on the stage giving this speech. Oh my gosh, I hope he cries. I hope he cries. I really do. Because I want that picture of him crying. So, but he deserves it, man. He deserves it. So he's worked his butt off. He did everything. He did it the right way. You can't go back and say he ever did anything wrong. Like, he messed football. No, he didn't cheat. He didn't do anything. He just played the game hard, and he worked hard. He treated it like it was something he loved to do. Just to see him go up there, man, it's going to be so much gratification for me.
Well, you're wondering if he's going to cry. Are you going to cry?
I almost did right then. No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but it'll definitely be, if I do, it'll be because I'm extremely, extremely proud of him. That's what it'll be.
But, I mean, you guys are all going to be there together, too. Like, that's the thing that I think is really fascinating about this, is that, you know, he's going to name check that defense, you know, because it meant so much to him. And the fact that you guys will all be in the house somewhere, I don't know what state of soberness you guys right. will be, but
we'll be there.
Will be there, yeah. screaming and acting a fool, watching your guy get into the league. I can imagine that those are times that you can't have back, so that it would be emotional.
Me, man, listen, everybody don't get to go there, man. Everybody doesn't get an opportunity to do what he's able to do. Everybody's not good enough. Some people are good enough. They're just not, the longevity isn't there. Everybody's good enough. They had a little bad luck. Like, there's always something, but for somebody that you play so long with and is a very good friend, he did it. Like, he was able to reach the top of the mountain, you know, like, and nobody can ever take it away. Like, it's like winning a Super Bowl, you know, like, gosh, this is rare, man. This is very rare. And like I said, it couldn't have happened to a better guy. Like, he stood for good through and through, man. I'm telling you, he is a great dude. He's a hell of a football player. Gosh, it has to happen for him. He's Brian Urlacher. I mean, he's one of the few guys. We still call Peanut. As great as Peanut is, I mean, nobody really calls him 33. 454 because it's different. When we say 34 here in Chicago, we know who you're talking about. When you say 54, you know who you're talking about. So I think he's every bit of the phrase Hall of Famer, every bit.
So outside of Urlacher, who is the most possibly going to cry? My money is on Lovey and Charles.
Peanut gonna cry for sure.
Peanut is gonna cry. Almost immediately, he's gonna cry.
If he utters the word Charles, he's gonna cry.
That's what I think is gonna happen too.
He's gonna break for sure.
Yeah,
he's gonna cry, and then probably, you know what? I think Bree's gonna have tears in his eyes, but he's gonna try to fight it.
Oh, he's gonna be fighting it so hard, AB. Yeah. He's gonna be sitting there with his hand over his face.
Yes. I think we might see one. You have to be looking because he's gonna catch that.
He gonna have that single tear going.
He gonna catch it quick, but other than that, man, it's just depending on who's there. I mean, I know of a few guys that will be there. I know a guy like Pat Manley who saw his entire career, who saw him from the moment when he got drafted till he finished. That's, you watch that Hall of Fame career. That's, a lot of people don't get to watch that.
Yeah, there's some respect that definitely goes along with that. You got to put some respect on Patrick Manley's name. All right, AB, man, I appreciate you. Thanks for being on the show and telling your story.
Absolutely, my man. No problem.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
That's Alex Brown. Check him out. That's my man on NBC Sports Chicago. I say soon-to-be award-winning broadcaster Alex Brown. I think that's going to happen for him, I think, because I'd like to have one of those little trophies too. Back after this on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.